Good morning.
Like I said earlier, this is my very favorite holiday. It's just a great time. Family time. All of our family will be together Thursday. Extended family even. In-laws and outlaws and other laws will all be there. There'll be 20-some folks there. Looking forward to that greatly. You know, these folks that came to this country, we call them pilgrims, just like the New King James does to ones that were scattered about. They're called pilgrims for a very special reason. They did not come to this country to be absorbed into the country. They didn't come to become what we call Indians, Native Americans. They came to plant their own nation. They still, for the most part, considered themselves Englishmen, living on a different continent. Oh, I know there were some Dutch and some French and other nations, but primarily when we talk about pilgrims, we're talking about Englishmen. These folks never intended to become part of the world that they were moving to. We're told in the New Testament that there are various names for Christians. You know, there are such things as disciples and saints and believers and priests and Christians. And those are all biblical names. And they all describe us as a relationship to God and a relationship to the world. And collectively we're called the church of God, the churches of Christ, the body of Christ, the temple of God, the family of God, and a lot of other names. And each one of these is an important one and well worth the time to spend and to think about what those relationships really imply. But the one that we find in 1 Peter, the first verse of the first chapter, Pilgrims of the Dispersion, is what I want to talk about today. We're starting a study for those of you who may be visiting with us, a study of 1 Peter today, and we'll be going on for several weeks in this discussion. I think a proper understanding of 1 Peter is, I think, very beneficial. For three reasons. One, it tells us what this Christian life really is. Number two, it tells us about a very important responsibility that we have, that God expects of us as Christians. And number three, it tells of the true home that we have, the goal that we have in this life. Let's first look at the word pilgrim. It's transliterated, really, from the Greek. It's not really translated. Peri-epidemos is the Greek word, made up of three words. Peri, like parable, it means to lay alongside. Epi has to do with upon. And demos has to do with folks that live in a city. We call it domicile is another word that we've got out of demos. Our homes, our cities. So Thayer, when he put all that together in his dictionary, it says it's one who comes to a foreign country to reside there beside the natives. Do you get the para? Beside the natives. Not to become a native, but to be always a stranger in the land. Never to become a citizen of that land. No intention, no desire to. Another fellow described it as one who stays in a place as a stranger or a visitor. We need to think about this word dispersion too, because that has a big part in it. The Greek word there means to sow. It's a farming term. It's when the farmer went out with his bag of seeds hanging around his neck, and he'd reach in and grab a handful and scatter them. Well, he was dispersing them. The idea is found also in John the 7th chapter in verse 35. And there it refers to the Jews who were scattered among the Greeks. Because of the Babylonian captivity, because of the Assyrian captivity, the Jews were scattered throughout the known world of that time. They were little pockets of them all over the place. But folks, you need to understand one thing. They stayed Jew. They didn't, for the most part, give up their Judaism and become heathens, become idol worshipers. They stayed worshipers of God. These are the particularly, I think, Peter's writing to those who were in Asia Minor, what we would call Turkey today. A lot of folks seem to think that Peter was writing to Jewish Christians only, because he talks about the dispersion, which is a term that was often used to describe Jews. I think he's talking to all Christians, and by inference to us today. He uses such terms as the idea of the holy nation and the people of God, the word, like the word elect. Those would not fit with Judaism. That's talking about Christians. Peter uses terms that once were defined this way, but now the definition has broadened. We find that all the time in our society. One that was broadened the wrong way is the word gay, for example. That used to be folks that were happy. Now it's folks that are happy to be different than we are in their sexual orientation. They're gay. So that meaning changed with time. Paul did the same thing in Philippians 3. He talks about the circumcision, verse number 3. And he's talking about Christians, even though circumcision was a mark of the Jew, God's people. Also in Galatians, the 6th chapter, Paul, in verse number 16, talks about the children of God, the Israel of God. And he's talking about the church. So I think Peter, in this expression, the pilgrims of the dispersion, is implying these are Christians who are living in a world that's not their own. These are Christians who are scattered like seeds among the heathens. Do we think of ourselves that way? Do you think of yourself as a pilgrim? I told Sandy, I really, you know, you remember the old 18 television story where George Peppard used to say at the end, "Oh, I love it when a plan comes together." This just is things like this that, you know, this is the natural progression of where I would be preaching, and it happens to be Thanksgiving, so I can preach about pilgrims and fits right in with what we're talking about. Well, I think there's lots of insights that we can get from this expression of being pilgrims of the dispersion. For example, the phrase reveals what the Christian life should be like and what it really is in God's eyes. It's a journey. It's a journey. It began when we first became Christians, and it'll end only when we reach our true destination. Sandy and I just went down to Florence, Alabama last week. I asked her several times, just like any child would do, "Are we there yet?" Somewhere about Louisville, Elizabethtown, I started getting tired of sitting. By the time we got to Nashville, I was extremely tired of sitting. And we still had a good ways to go to get down to Florence. Don't we do that sometimes on the journey of life? We get tired. And we say, you know, aren't I there yet? Aren't I there yet? You know, how much it is that we need to think of life as a journey. And that changes our whole perspective on life. This life is not an end of itself. This is not what it's all about. This is just a journey. Just a journey. It's only a temporary trip to our final destination. And boy, does that change our perspective on life. You know, yeah, I got tired. And then I got really tired. And sometimes we do that in life. But if we think of this life as a journey, it changes our whole perspective on our homes, changes our perspective on a job. We look at things differently when viewed in that light. It even changes our perspective on death. I mean, you think about it. This is not the end of life. It's the end of the journey. We're finally there. I want to tell you, when we turned in that driveway, it felt good to know I could open that door and get out. I didn't have to get back in that torture instrument for several days. It's the end of a journey. How different that is from how the world looks at life and death. They're scared to death, as the saying goes. We shouldn't be scared of death. We ought to look forward to being the end of our journey. It's not the end of life. It's the beginning of eternity. It's the beginning of that time that we can spend in our true home. That's what it means to be a pilgrim. And once we embark on this journey, we need to be like our spiritual father Abraham. Turn with me, if you will, to Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And I'm going to be going to verse number 8. It says, by faith Abraham, Hebrews 11:8, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed and went out, not knowing where he went. He had no idea what problems he's going to have between Ur and Palestine. He had no idea. There would be days when there wouldn't be water that he wanted. There would be hot. It would rain. It would be cold when they went up through the mountains. That wasn't a concern. He went. He was told to go, and he went. And by faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange land. Did you catch that? He didn't sojourn there in planning himself in their society. He sojourned as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of him of the same promise. Because, here's how he could do that. He looked for a city whose foundation, whose builder and maker is God. He wasn't going to Palestine, he was going to heaven. And what he had to do to get to heaven was to obey God. And he looked at everything from where he was to heaven as a journey, as a trip. And if that's our attitude, then as this passage goes on to say, then God will not be ashamed to call us His children. Wow, what a thought. God's ready to step up and look Satan in the eye and say, that one's mine. Just like we see in Job, the first chapter. That's my child. Right there, I'm proud of him. I'm proud of her. That's one of mine. I'm not ashamed to call them. And then we can honestly sing songs like we just did. This world's not my home. I'm just a passing through. Can we really sing that song with meaning? I don't look at this world as my home. That's what we're saying when we sing that song. Are we lying to ourselves and to other people? I look at heaven as my home. And then the second thing about this, the second insight I think we can get, is the phase ought to remind us of a very important responsibility that we have. A very important responsibility. And that is to be separate. If we're going to be a pilgrim. We can't be like everybody else. The old argument, everybody else is doing it, ought to say, then you shouldn't. Because you're a pilgrim. You're not a native of the land. We're to be in this world, but not of this world. Yes, we've got to get up and go to work just like everybody else does. We got to take care of the house. We got to take care of our responsibility just like everybody else does. We got to pay our bills. We've got to be involved in the community, all of those kind of things. But we're not to be of the world. We're not to be of the world. Remaining separate may cause some folks to think we're strange. Peter found that out in 1 Peter 4, verses 3 and 4. So when you don't run to the extremes like they did, they'll think that's strange. Why in the world aren't you doing what you've always done? Well, it's because this world's not my home. I'm a pilgrim. I'm no longer a citizen here. Jesus said it would happen, it happened to him. John the 15th chapter, verses 18 and 19. Figuratively speaking, we need to be like the foreign refugees that are now in our country. You think about the Hispanic and the Somalian communities. Do you find them rushing to change their language? Do you see them anxious to change their clothing? Are they anxious to give up their traditions? To give up their lifestyle? Nope. They resist giving up their heritage. They resist giving up their language. They resist attempts to Americanize them and to destroy their cultural traditions. They're truly pilgrims. They really are. That's the meaning of the word. Somebody that comes and lives in another country separately. Now I'll ask the question again. Are we pilgrims? Are we pilgrims? Are we keeping ourselves separate from the world? Or are we allowing the world to influence our speech? Are we allowing the world to influence our dress? Are we allowing the world to influence our culture? We need to be separate, or we're no longer pilgrims. We've become naturalized citizens. We're to be pilgrims of the dispersion. Are we? Are you? You know, it's easy to answer that, are we? Oh, no. But when you get it down to are, am I? Are you, individually, a pilgrim? You remember what John said in 1 John 2, verses 15 and 16? 17. He tells us that we need to recognize that there are some things in this world that we can't be around. He said, all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father. That's of the world. And the world passes away. And the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Are we pilgrims? Third thing that this phrase ought to remind us of, and that's our true home. Our true home. Our citizenship is in heaven. I don't know that you'll find a more patriotic person than me. Fought for the flag, fought for the country. Love this country, but my citizenship's in heaven. Not in this country. Philippians 3, 20 and 21. We're looking for a new heavens and a new earth. Not this old one that we've corrupted. We're looking for a new one. That's where we'll find our true home. The Bible describes it as a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Hebrews 11, verse 10, and then verse 16. That's the city that I want to live in. Oh, I'm glad to live in Westerville. It's a decent community. But it's not my home. That's not my home. That's not the city. Hebrews 13 and verse number 14 tells us We're looking for a city that is to come. That's to come. Like I said, I'm glad to live in Westerville, but you know something? Some of those roads are getting pretty old. Some of the infrastructure is going to have to be replaced. And I've been around long enough to know when you look and see potholes everywhere, you know what's going to happen? Your taxes are going up. Somebody's got to pay to put tar back in those. Somebody's got to hire the guy to do it. Somebody's got to hire the guy to drive the roller and buy the roller. I'm looking for a city that's brand new. The city that's to come. Revelation 21, verse 1 and following tells us it's a city to come down out of heaven. Nothing but perfection in heaven. That's the city that we need to look forward to. That's where we who are now strangers and foreigners in this world, scattered like seed, will be at home, gathered together. Gathered together. You know, those who are truly pilgrims will often think and talk about their home. I remember when I lived in Vietnam. That was a favorite topic, home. As a matter of fact, we talked about it as the world. Wonder what's going on in the world, we would say. When are you going back to the world? When are you going home? When are you going to see your family? When are you going to see your loved ones? When are you going to be around that scenery that just thrills you to be there? If we're truly pilgrims of the dispersion, we'll think often and talk often about our heavenly home. Are you a pilgrim? If we are, then we view our life here on earth as a journey to a foreign land. In a foreign land. We look at ourselves as separate from the world and anything that will lead us away from God. If we are pilgrims, then we view our city, our home, that heavenly city that God has prepared for those who confess that they're strangers and pilgrims on this earth. Are you a pilgrim? Well, I want you to know something, and I want you to know it plain. You're not a pilgrim of dispersion if you've not yet begun your spiritual journey. If you've not yet begun to travel on that narrow road that Jesus talks about by obedience to the gospel of Christ. You're not a pilgrim if you've done that and then you allowed the attractions of this world to entice you to settle down and to become a naturalized citizen. Entice you by those things that will separate you from God. Are you a pilgrim? That's a very simple question. Very profound answer. And it's an answer that I can't give for anyone but me. I can't answer for Sandy. I can't answer for anyone in this room. I can only answer for Don. And so can you. You can't look at your mate and say, well, he's not or she's not. You need to look at yourself and say, am I a pilgrim of the dispersion? Do I look upon myself as traveling on a journey, scattered among the world like the seed, needing to take sprout wherever I am, and spread the opportunity for pilgrims Are you a pilgrim? Can we help? Have you been immersed for the forgiveness of your sins based upon your belief that Jesus is the Christ? Based upon the fact that you have turned from sin, desiring to follow Him and willing to confess that, have you been forgiven by obedience to the gospel? Have you started on that journey? Are you still on that journey? Are you a pilgrim? Can we help? Give us that opportunity right now, please. This world is not our home. We need desperately to journey to that heavenly city. Please, won't you come and go with us?